from KQED. This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Danielle Venton. California Governor Jerry Brown says there is one area of policy where he's willing to work with President Donald Trump.
We fight on health care. We fight on immigration. But we work on infrastructure.
The governor appeared on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday. Brown made his case for President Trump to approve a $650 million grant to electrify Caltrain, the commuter rail system between San Jose and San Francisco.
And this is a real test for Donald Trump. Does he believe in a shovel-ready construction project that will create American jobs, buy American products, is ready to go within a couple of months or not?
The administration must decide on funding by late May. Four people were arrested for assault over the weekend at a pro-Trump rally that drew over 1,000 people. It was held in what has always been Southern California's reliable red dot, Orange County. But as Erica Aguilar reports, even California conservatives recognize that's changing.
It was a nostalgic OCC.
USA!
Lots of red, white, and blue, barbecues, the beach. It reminded Ludwig Sorge, who's from Costa Mesa, of the old conservative Orange County.
There's pockets like this that are pro-Trump, and that's just the way it is.
Orange County went blue the last presidential election. That hadn't happened since the Great Depression. Registered Republicans still outnumber Democrats, but barely. And when Dwary held an anti-Trump sign as marchers passed her, she's a Democrat from Huntington Beach and thinks the area's just diversifying.
Well, maybe they have new neighbors who are immigrants, and they learn from each other, and they're more tolerant.
The rally began peacefully, doves released, but then a fight broke out among a dozen or so Trump supporters and protesters.
I got sprayed.
By whom?
Disrespectful children.
That was the march organizer, Jennifer Sterling. Kevin Pham of Orange County says he got punched by a protester.
She grabbed my flag and threw it down, and she sucker punched me. But then there was a girl, and she's like, yeah, what, you want some? You want some? So I just walked away.
Police made a few arrests, and the march continued. Pham, an independent voter, says he attended the rally to support his Reagan-era conservative brothers.
We're a family. Some of us are Republicans, some of us are not.
Like the different types of conservatives who marched in support of President Trump in a county whose red dot isn't a sure thing. For the California Report, I'm Erica Aguilar in Huntington Beach.
For more than a month now, the Central Coast community of Big Sur has been split in two. Along Highway 1, there are active mudslides to the south, and to the north, a condemned bridge has been demolished. A replacement bridge isn't expected for another 6 months. In the meantime, locals stuck in between are counting on a new hiking trail to get them in and out. From KAZU, Krista Almanzon reports.
A jackhammer works away at what's left of the two-lane Pfeiffer Canyon Bridge in the middle of Big Sur. Just to the south, a helicopter sits parked on Highway 1 in front of the Big Sur Deli, a sign of the times in this now isolated part of the Central Coast. But inside the deli, life feels almost normal. Music plays over the sound system and the shelves look freshly stocked. Stephen Mayer's dad owns the store. It's the only place that's stayed open just south of the bridge.
We have been doing supply runs around the south through Nacimiento.
Nacimiento-Ferguson Road, a rugged and remote drive to Monterey, where Mayer lives, turning 1 hour into four. Going home has not been part of his daily routine since a mudslide damaged the bridge beyond repair.
Yeah, I just sleep on the floor. I have an air mattress, but it's not too bad.
So he's eager for a new trail around the bridge to open. It would mean a 20-minute walk to the other side instead of hours of driving.
Oh, it's going to be very important. I think I'm going to be hiking in and out every day if I can, just to get back home.
Customer Carissa Chapelet shares his eagerness. She's been organizing locals to help state parks and the California Conservation Corps build the trail.
We've got enough jalapenos, you think? This is our jalapeno day. Getting the crew lunch order here.
Chapelet and other locals have cars on either side of the downed bridge, meaning the trail will bring life, kind of, back to normal. I join her just up the highway at the trailhead with stairs headed down into a thick growth of trees.
So we're standing on some stairs just a few weeks ago. I'm guessing these weren't here?
Right. So actually, just about 3 weeks ago, there was nothing here. It was just like walking there.
She points to the bushes that creep up to the road. Next to them, a sign reads, "Trail closed under construction."
It's critical. It's not like we can wait like another month or 2 months or even a week. I mean, I don't know how to stress this because for me, it's really personal.
Everyone on the south side of the bridge has a story of hardship from being isolated for more than a month.
I have actually a very dear friend who's actually my ex-husband from years ago who has stage 4 cancer that I've been his primary care person for. So for a month, I've been cut off from being able to help him. And luckily, I have some friends who are helping.
There's also roughly 40 kids who can't get to school. For now, teachers are being flown in by helicopter. Then there are others here who can't get to work. But the trail, while nearly done, is still a construction site. I walked it earlier in the day with John DeLuca of California State Parks. We make our way through switchbacks and up several flights of stairs. He says the steep terrain required the trail to be this elaborate.
There's really not much footing. You'd be on all fours, grabbing at trees and branches to pull yourself up.
We pass several crews made up of locals and state workers.
They're drilling down in to put the rebar to hold the step structure. See how he's pounding the rebar into it now?
Once complete, the trail will be for Big Sur locals only. Expanding access is an ongoing debate, especially for local businesses who rely on tourists.
It's still being developed, the trail plan itself, but the intended use is for immediate needs of the community.
A community that's anxious for this trail to open so people can get on with their lives. For the California Report, I'm Krista Almanzon in Big Sur.
Later today, two Democratic lawmakers plan to reveal details of a bill that would require all California counties to offer an alternative to cash bail. The proposal from Assemblyman Rob Bonta and Senator Bob Hertzberg is sure to set up a big legislative fight in the Capitol. The California Report's John Sepulvedo sat down with KQED politics and government reporter Marisa Lagos to learn more about the legislation.
Thank you, Danielle. Joining us in the studio is Marisa Lagos of KQED's Government and Politics Desk. Good morning, Marisa.
Good morning, John.
So we have learned of legislation that's going to be filed today. Is that right?
Yeah. So this was actually sort of filed in December as a shell bill, something that needed to be filled out. And this morning, language is going to be coming out on this bail reform bill that is a joint effort between Assemblyman Rob Bonta in the Assembly and Senator Bob Hertzberg. And basically what they're doing here is trying to really rein in the cash bail system, which is the way that a lot of people get out of jail after they've been arrested for a crime, and move more towards this pretrial risk assessment system, which allows courts and police to kind of conduct an assessment and decide whether or not or what conditions need to be put on somebody so they can be released safely as they await trial.
Now, is the goal of the lawmakers to reform the bail system or to streamline and kind of lessen the impact on those who can't afford bail and get them out of jail quicker? What is the goal here?
Yeah, I mean, they're basically saying that the current system is unfair, that poor people bear the brunt of it because if you have enough money, no matter almost in most cases what you did, you can get out. I talked to Rob Bonta, and here's how he kind of talked about the impacts of this money bail system.
Folks can lose their jobs because they can't show up for work. They can lose their children if they're, for example, a single parent and there's no one who can take care of their children while they're being detained. They can lose their car. And folks who are detained pre-trial are much more likely to plead to crimes just so they can get out.
So I think what they're saying here is that the assumption should be, unless you're a safety risk, you should be released, not that you should stay in jails. And one thing that was brought up to me is this idea that, like, people are actually convicted of crimes or getting released early because of overcrowded jails that are filled with people who are waiting trial and haven't actually been convicted yet.
Now, Marisa, the whole idea behind bail is that if you put money down, you'll come back and face something unpleasant, which is the court system. Is there any studies or anything to show that people who don't put money down come back to court?
Well, proponents of pretrial programs do say that, yes, there is a lot of studies that show that money bail doesn't actually guarantee anything and that these pretrial risk assessments are more accurate and potentially more helpful to the defendant in terms of putting conditions on that work. I think that, you know, there's a lot of safeguards that they're trying to build in here, saying that judges have discretion. If they don't like what they see, they can keep somebody in jail. Also consider that people who put down a bail bond through a bail agent don't get that 10% back ever. They've only put down 10%.
So they put down 10% to to post whatever.
The bail.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, but if you're rich and you put down the full amount, you actually can get that full amount back. So Senator Bob Hertzberg, the other sponsor, kind of framed the question like this.
You know, is this about the size of your wallet or the size of your risk to society? That's what should be measured.
And Hertzberg also notes that there was a recent study by the Federal Reserve showing that 46% of Americans said they didn't have enough money to cover a $400 expense. So he's saying that this is not just something limited to very poor people. This is really a question for nearly anybody who would get put behind bars.
So it sounds like a win-win for everyone except bail agents.
So I do expect the bail industry or a lot of folks in that industry to fight this. I think we're setting up a big fight in Sacramento over this issue, and we've seen them pour a lot of money into lobbying efforts in other states where this happened. What Bob Hertzberg argues, the senator, is that the people who are going to be affected by this bill actually wouldn't be paying bail anyway because they couldn't afford it. So they would just be sitting in jail to begin with.
Marisa Lagos, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, John.
The Republican effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act failed last week. But while the ACA remains the law of the land, a lot of Californians feel it's not enough. Many residents are still uninsured, and others who have coverage have problems paying premiums and deductibles. Some politicians are talking once again about single-payer health insurance for all of California. KQED's health editor Carrie Feibel spoke with Pauline Bartoloni, a reporter with our partner Kaiser Health News, about what it would take to make that happen.
When California politicians talk about creating a single-payer health system or a universal health care system, what are they talking about exactly? And can you tell us what the difference is between those two?
So there are a couple of different ways to create a more universal system. We have single-payer health care that involves one state-run health program. So that's kind of like the Canadian health care system where everybody would be in one pool. There's one pot of money, one government agency setting the rules about payments and coverage. Then there's a universal health plan such as Healthy San Francisco. That's the one Gavin Newsom's entertaining for the state of California. And that's really built on an employer-based healthcare model that we have right now. Some people call it an all-payer healthcare system. Employers are required to pay in, and the rest of the uninsured are covered by public money and their own contributions.
So at this point in time, who is talking about universal healthcare or single-payer plans in California?
There's definitely been more chatter about universal healthcare lately. Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom recently said he's looking at a universal healthcare plan in his run for governor in 2018. A couple of state lawmakers introduced a single-payer proposal. The state insurance commissioner said that he supports single-payer, where insurers would have less control. He says single-payer is more cost-effective and would cover more people. And even Governor Jerry Brown is talking about it. He wouldn't say whether or not he would support it, of course, but he was open to the conversation, and he emphasized some of the challenges to it, some of the political and economic challenges.
How much would single-payer cost in California? Is it feasible?
So there are estimates from when legislators proposed a single-payer system a decade ago, and they said it would cost upwards of $200 billion, and that would require a payroll or income tax.
And that would be a heavy lift politically, I think, even though we have Democratic majorities.
That's right. Raising anything that would require a new tax needs a two-thirds vote in the legislature. So even though we have a Democratic supermajority right now in California's legislature, there are always a couple of outliers. So we can't assume that every Democrat would vote to implement a new tax. Advocates for universal health care say that passing a single-payer system may require a vote from the electorate. So a proposition would only require a simple majority.
But it's not just funding. It's resistance to moving people. It would involve moving people off their job-based plans, in essence.
Yeah, that's right. A single-payer system would put everybody in one pool. And right now, almost half of Californians get coverage through their job. So it would require moving everyone in job-based coverage to a new healthcare plan, and they may be happy with their coverage.
Are there any models for this that people can point to?
Yeah, so Lieutenant Governor Newsom's office said that they're looking at the Healthy San Francisco model for California, but they're not sure whether it can be implemented statewide. Right now, Healthy San Francisco is funded through a mix of public dollars and enrollee contributions and some employer money, but they're not sure if it could work on a larger scale.
Thank you so much, Pauline.
Thank you, Carrie.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, dedicated to a healthcare system that works for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org. The James Irvine Foundation, with information about the 2018 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards, available at irvine.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
And finally, if there's any lesson to learn from March Madness, it's not to celebrate until the final buzzer. So, as we just heard, the Republican plan to repeal and replace Obamacare failed last week. But that didn't stop the conservative American Action Network from airing these ads during the NCAA tournament on Friday.
Thank Congressman Daryl Issa. Thank Congressman David Valadao for keeping his promise and replacing the Affordable Care Act with the better health care you deserve.
So if you had the American Health Care Act in the final of your bracket, well, maybe next year. And that's the California Report for Monday, March 27th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Danielle Benton.